Dave, when we were developing the scenario, this came out of a real discussion that you had with another pilot who happens to be sitting at this table, if I understand it correctly, and you didn't agree. So I know we're going to have some differences of opinion. Tell me a little bit about what happened, how this conversation came about, because you've got a lot of experience flying over some very remote parts of the world.
Yeah, well, when you're just flying straight and level over some of that rough country, you have lots of time to think about these different potential options. And you know, just personally, I grew up surfing at the beach, and I'm really comfortable in water environments more so than land. Other people, you know, have different backgrounds and feel differently. But in looking into these possibilities, I was surprised at how successful the vast majority of ditchings are. And, you know, that sort of happened to fall in line with my natural predisposition.
So even though remote, the chance of having to egress an inverted airplane in the water gives me just incredible concern. I grew up in Montana. I flew over the trees, rarely over water. So I've put a lot of thought into what would happen if I lost my engine and I had to land an airplane in the trees. Assuming we're flying over a very typical northern Minnesota forest, that's pretty dense trees. I would go for the trees. I'd go for the shoreline. I'd try to pick the most dense patch of trees that I possibly could, trim up the airplane for minimum sink airspeed, and maintain control all the way into the trees.
I actually confronted this conundrum about 15 years ago. I was doing some research on ditching. I studied about 500 ditching accidents, and I was given a presentation for Bob Martens, who has done some work here for Pilot Workshops. And I concluded that the water was absolutely the no-brainer choice because the egress percentages are 90%, and it doesn't matter whether the airplane turns over or not. The egress rates are high. And Bob made the point, well, what about trees? I see a lot of accidents where pilots settle into trees and they survive. I could never develop any good data to show that those were more survivable than water. So I always concluded that the water is more survivable. And it turns out not to matter whether it's a retractable or a fixed gear, whether the gear is up or down, whether the flaps are up or down, the egress rate is high. And that's what you're after. Because if you invert into water, you are motivated, and you'll usually figure out a way to get out. So the incidence of people trapped in sinking airplanes is really quite low. I think the numbers were under 5%.
I would question how many actually times that's happened. What volume of data do we have to work from? And then another consideration is low wing versus high wing. Ditching in a low wing airplane and getting out on top of the wing, I would imagine, has to be a lot easier, or part of the consideration for this situation where you're flying a high-wing airplane, perhaps.
You know, our colleague Barry Schiff looked into this in some detail and studied the ditching accidents too, and found no difference between low and high-wing airplanes and survivability. And that was surprising to me too. I would have thought a fixed-gear, tricycle-gear plane with a high-wing would have the worst survival rates in ditching accidents, but it turned out not to be the case.
We have about between 20 and 30 ditching accidents a year. It's a little lower now than it was in the 1990s. So there's a fair amount of data. The problem with the data is it's not very specific, so it's hard to draw really airtight conclusions about it. But if you look at it globally, you find two groups. You find the river, lake, and inshore ditchings, and then you find the deep ocean ditchings, and that survival rate's much lower. But if you look at it globally and you look at survive, didn't survive, the percentage is really quite high, and the type of airplane just doesn't matter. They're often injuries, but the survival rate is high.
I know two pilots who have ended up in aircraft in the water. One was an engine failure. The airplane ditched into Long Island Sound. They were able to land wings level under control and egress the airplane. It went under in less than 3 minutes, but they were able to get out of the aircraft. So they were motivated to get out. The second wasn't actually a ditching. It was a collision with a submerged object in a Kristen Husky, and the airplane did end up inverted in the water. And your advice to wait until all motion stops before attempting to do anything to get out is a very good idea. He said that he tried to get out before while things were still settling, and he couldn't figure out which way was up. He did obviously get out. But yes, everybody, you know, it's a sample of two, but everybody I know who's been involved in a water landing, a ditching in an airplane or an inversion in an airplane did manage to get themselves out of it. There's probably some training aspect to that that we might talk about.
I think I could talk a little bit to that, but before I get started, I'm the only helicopter pilot at the table, I believe. My first helicopter instructor was an old Vietnam guy, and he told me in his experience, the only guys that survived were the ones that hit the trees with zero ground speed. So my inclination is, in an airplane, you can never get that. It's hard to do it in a helicopter, much less an airplane. So I would say definitely the water. But I have done, through the Army, some ditching training. And there's a couple things you should think about. First of all, you need to maintain, it's going to be kind of hard if you're flying, but you need to maintain, put your arm somewhere where you can hold on to the airplane, and then your other hand should be on your safety belt. And you need to maintain control and touching the airplane part, because if the airplane does flip, it may, I mean, think where the engine is, it's probably going to go forward. It may not flip over. A helicopter will because the engine's above, but an airplane will go down. You need to keep your eyes closed, keep a hand on the airplane, open the door. And we didn't talk about the door. You should open the door prior and make sure you lock it so it doesn't shut. Again, that door will probably warp, maybe, upon crashing. So keep one hand on the safety belt, keep one hand on the airplane, and then as soon as it goes in the water, when the motion stops, then you can get yourself out of the airplane that way.
And that brings to mind a couple other survival aspects here. One is, and this was related to me by someone who didn't ditch but crashed on dry land on a runway, all the stuff that's in the airplane that you haven't properly secured because nobody properly secures it will come forward and it will beat you to a pulp. So that argues for securing that stuff if you think to do it, but it also argues for warning the passengers about it. Because my friend who crashed the twin, we carried coolers in the airplanes. The cooler came forward, all the ice came forward. He got pelted with drinks. He got pelted with his JEP case and all the other stuff that you carry. So that's one aspect of it. In Cessnas, there's a fairly high incidence of the windshield caving in. So when you touch down, it's true in 182s and 172s, there's enough hydrodynamic force to cave the windshield in. So you're going to get just a flood of water. And that brings to mind a third thing to think about. It's called cold water gasp. And it is the tendency to draw breath when you're suddenly immersed in cold water. If you're ready for it, you can prepare for it, and you can suppress it. If you're not, you're very likely to get a mouthful, if not a lungful, of water. And I think the only thing you can do is to brief the passengers about it before you impact and make sure they have their belts as tight as they can possibly stand them.
You know, and Paul brings up an excellent point with the pre-flight briefing, because in flying over terrain like this, it's essential. You know, you don't want to wait until the engine stops to ask your passenger if they can swim. You know, in flying over a country like this, it would seem like an excellent idea to bring up that topic, water or trees, before takeoff.
One minor point, the new 406 megahertz ELTs have a switch. You can turn it on. You don't have to wait for impact. So part of your checklist or briefing or thinking about an emergency landing is, if you have a chance, turn that on before you impact, and that way there's a better chance of someone picking up the signal.
Also, the flotation devices were in the back. You have to remember that when you get out of the aircraft, whatever you have on you, you're not going to go back and get it. So in the military, we always wear gear, so you don't have to think about it. But in the civilian world, you really need to think about what is on your person, especially your personal locator beacon.
Well, that brings up an interesting point. Something you had said, Dave, was, you know, maybe wearing the gear, but in that moment when you undo your belt, if you're wearing an active flotation device, that's even more likely to upend you into a different position and get you out of orientation with the airplane, which, having done ditching training, is why they have you hold on to something. It's not so much that you are going to open that door so that you remember where that door is, because the moment your belt is undone, you rotate, you know, one way or the other, whether you have gear or not. So there's a question of whether you have the gear with you or wear the gear. You know, that's those are two different things.
Well, I have a friend, Ken Whittakin, who teaches seaplanes. He also does a lot of backcountry flying. He lives in Texas, but he flies, I think it's a Super Cub, up to Alaska every summer. So he does a lot of this sort of flying. And he has an interesting statement, and I'm trying to incorporate it myself and starting to think of where things in the airplane as well. He said that if it's within reach from where you sit while seated in belted into the pilot seat, it's survival gear. If it's anywhere else in the aircraft, it's camping gear, and you're not likely to be able to have it in an emergency situation. So you'd have to think about what's with you.
You know, I'm surprised nobody's asked about the dog yet.
I hadn't noticed.
It's like
about it.
it's like there's two points about the dog. First, mm-hmm. my younger brother Harry, he was actually involved in a crash in the mountains in a similar airplane with a 50-pound Labrador Retriever in the back, and the dog, to Paul's point, became a missile and ended up actually. Fortunately for my brother, the dog was sitting behind the pilot, but it's like, unfortunately for the guy who was flying, the dog, when the airplane hit, slammed forward, pushed the pilot's face against the panel with enough force to break his jaw. And the dog, when they came to a stop, the dog was fine. The pilot was in pretty tough shape. But the point about the dog is, it's like, would it change the calculation if the dog couldn't swim? And to me, the answer is no. I love my dog. The dog's a member of the family, but the dog is a dog. And the dog would sounds pretty cruel, but it's like, in this situation, if I had a dog that couldn't swim, it wouldn't change the calculation.
So would it change the calculation for other people around the table if the passenger couldn't swim? Because given how much we've been talking about how much more survivable the ditching is versus going into the trees, if you weigh those two options, you've got a crash in the trees and the injuries there for both of you, or you can swim and you're going to go for the water and you're going to brief them. You know they can't, or they may just completely be terrified, and even if they could swim, you can't count on them doing it. Which of those two things is actually more desirable?
Wouldn't change it for me, because I'm going back to this global data that I've read. The incidence of egress is successful. The incidence of drowning is low. And so you have to assume in there that some of those people couldn't swim, but they still survived. As far as going into the trees, I just don't know what the numbers are. I can't make a risk assessment. I'm worried about, mainly I'm worried about fires, Dave mentioned. If you breach the tanks, there's a very good possibility of fire. You do see that in the accident record, but it's hard to put numbers on it.
It would change it for me. If I had a passenger that couldn't swim, I'm not gonna put him in a lake, even if it meant a higher risk of injury or death for both of us.
Would it be, let's suppose, okay, we've ruled out the water, the deep water anyway. What about the shallow water where they don't have to swim? I just have to get them out versus crashing into the trees. Does that become a more desirable option?
No, I mean, it's like it's water or trees. It's like I fly pretty regularly. I'm not necessarily thinking I'm good enough to be able to put it down in the 2 feet of water. I just don't think it's realistic to expect you're going to be able to manage it with that much precision.
Well, whether we're talking about water or trees, one of the aspects of this, of surviving, is touching down at the proper speed. And you mentioned in your response that the speed would be less than the best glide speed for the aircraft. I just wonder if anyone wants to extrapolate on that, because there are specific speeds to fly for least rate of descent. Want to say something?
Well, I'm
throwing you a softball here.
Well, you're going to be a little slower than you would be at best glide. That's the number most of us have in our heads for simulated engine failures and so forth. So you're going to be closer potentially to a stall. And the obvious problem, whether you go trees or water, is if the airplane stalls, you dip a wing, you cartwheel, that's the worst possible outcome. We had an accident recently up in the Pacific Northwest where a Bonanza pilot was flying back at night across the Cascades. He lost the engine, and he wasn't able to make an airport. He was IFR. He was talking to the controllers, and he had to put it into the trees. And again, this is one data point. But you look at the pictures, that airplane was absolutely destroyed, and he survived. Now, he had some broken bones and so forth, and he ended up high up in the trees, but he was able to survive that accident. So he survived because he kept the airplane under control and did not have a loss of control, stall spin type scenario when he hit the trees.
How did he get out of the trees?
I don't know all the details on that, yeah.
But that brings up a really interesting question is, what if you're IFR or what if your IMC, you're descending and you have moving map or synthetic vision and you can use that to land in a lake? You know, what if you can use that to go to the water? Wouldn't you want to give that a try before flying blindly into a tree canopy?
That was my point, is that if you're going to take a flight like this, even if it seems routine, you've done it a million times before, you really need to think before you take off about what kind of terrain you're going to be flying over, what options you would have, so that you aren't trying to make so many decisions in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like, coming from around the table, the biggest impediment to that water landing isn't the numbers or the technique, it's the fear. It's the fear of finding yourself in that situation where you're suddenly in the water, out of control, probably inverted, water's coming in around you, and you know there is a short timer ticking that says, you can't breathe here. You cannot live in this space for very long, even though it's more survivable. And I think that, that might be something to sort of globally look back and think about, is they're the things that we are the most comfortable with sort of mentally, but they may not actually be the safest potential outcome if we can look at it objectively. And that you're not going to have the ability in the few seconds after the engine fails to run through all the objective calculus in the airplane before you have to make that decision. So you got to make those decisions before you even depart.